You need a different source. Guerrilla Radio, a century of news every Thursday and Saturday. Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, as Emily Lowen's challenge for the BC Green Leadership, eco-socialist, author, journalist, and political activist Eve Engler is also contending for a party, the federal NDP's first chair. He's managed to hurdle considerable and unprecedented obstacles just to gain a place at the NDP podium, but that race isn't won yet. Eve's Canada-wide campaign tour that will bring him to the island here later this week has had a rocky start in Toronto, perhaps predictably, but we'll see. Eve, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's always my great pleasure, of course. Now, Eve, before getting to the recent conversion of St. Paul or St. Paul's decision on your inaugural event, when and where will your tour campaign land here in BC?
I will be in Vancouver on the 21st, and then I will be coming over to the island, Duncan and Nanaimo, on the 22nd, and then I'll be in Victoria on the 23rd, 7 p.m. Cook Street Village Activity Center. And then I'm back over in Vancouver on September 24th.
Oh, that's a busy schedule. And what's the status now of your attempt? Maybe you can describe briefly what you're trying to do to get onto the podium there with the NDP and to be able to vie for the leadership. What's the status of that effort?
Yeah, so we have gathered more than 1,000 signatures, fulfilling all the requirements of the NDP. It's actually 500 signatures. And then there's equity and regional and age requirements. We've surpassed all of that by more than doubled it. Also, we've begun raising funds. We have actually raised now $55,000 in 10 days. The ultimate fee is $100,000 you have to pay to the party to participate in the race, plus another $1,500 vetting fee. So we are on our way to being able to raise that sum. You also need money, of course, to run a race, so you would need to raise more than the $100,000. We're on our way for that. We are basically building momentum on the campaign and trying to make it more difficult for anyone within the party brass that might not want us officially part of the leadership race, because there is a vetting process that gives all kinds of arbitrary power to insiders, and we are trying to build momentum, have money on the table to make it difficult for them to block us from participating. If they were to block us, they would have to, reject the money that we would be giving to the party. And so we are basically doing this tour as part of the campaign to build awareness of the policy issues, and that's of course challenging capitalism and imperialism, pushing economic democracy, degrowth, decolonization, and we have a very elaborate policy platform that's going to be released quite soon. It's being there's a consultation process that's taking place with different activists and researchers on that. It's already been drafted by about 40 people. So we're basically trying to, build momentum, build awareness, and then we will submit for the vetting process so that we can participate in the initial debates and forums, which start in late October.
Well, and have any contenders officially thrown their hats into the NDP ring? Do you know who you will, should you get through the process put in front of you by the NDP machine? Do you know who you'll be talking to or with?
Well, Heather McPherson, who is the current foreign affairs critic, she is definitely part of the race. She hasn't announced officially, but she is gathering signatures. Same thing for Avi Lewis and Rob Ashton, who is the head of the International Longshoremen's Union president. He has announced, I'm not sure if he'll be able to fulfill the requirements. And then there's two other candidates who I don't think are going to make it to the ballot.
What about Jenny Kwon? Has she expressed any interest that you know of?
I haven't heard any indication that Jenny Kwan is seeking the leadership.
So right now you're the first out of the dock out of the gate officially then.
Yep, we are the first out of the gate, and the others who are who we know are planning to run, specifically Heather and Avi, are pursuing a slightly different kind of strategy, and in my opinion, a little bit odd why they're being so kind of coy about participating in the race.
Well, low key would be an understatement if the voting is supposed to happen in October. That's
Oh, no,
only only.
the voting's not in October. The voting's
Oh,
not
okay.
in March. The voting is the end of March. The beginning of the race with there's a forum that we held by the Canadian Labour Congress on I believe it's October 22nd, and then there is supposed to be a leadership debate initially announced for November 1st, and there's some indication that date might be pushed back a bit. So that's sort of the start. If you're going to participate in the race, you would obviously want to participate in the different official debates and the semi-official forum, which the Canadian Labour Congress event would be.
Yeah, and that's only 6 weeks away. You talked a little bit about your platform. Of course, you have any of these potential competitors, have they put forth a platform that you can prepare for and take aim at?
Oh, not at this point. They don't even have official websites, whereas we, of course, have a website that's been up for I think over a month now.
Well, I don't want to stress the negative, but I was just talking with Igmar Lee about Emily Lowen, the BC Green candidate out here. And there's some parallels, not only to your run for the NDP, the federal NDP leadership, but also to Anjali Appadurai's run for the provincial BC NDP leadership a couple of few years back now, where she was kind of iced out. She was an outsider to begin with. And then rules were, I'm not sure if I can say that they were rigged, but the rules of her signing up members at the last minute and everything were challenged, and her leadership bid nixed or kiboshed in the final analysis. You're trying to sign people up too, right?
Yes, we've signed up. I don't know exact number, but about 1,100 people have signed up the nomination form. We have also had people sign up to become members of the party, but we haven't pushed that as hard yet because that's more of a something that once we're past the vetting process, that becomes the more important moment of pushing pushing that, and we will have a few months. Our strategy, of course, is informed by Anjali's. What they basically changed the rules in the middle of the race to push her out, and they've already started doing some of that with us. So, for instance, we started signing up people for the nomination form, and we were following the rules as they were laid out in the handbook that was made available, which they took they took added days to give to us. Which and then they've then once we started signing up people, they said, well, you have to only sign up in the official form, but there is no official form. They didn't put an official form in the document, and it doesn't state that in the initial nomination package that it has to be some sort of official form. So we're already seeing some of this of kind of changing the rules as the race goes on, which is clearly designed to undermine us. So we understand that there are forces within the party that do not want us part of the leadership race. They don't like the idea of talking about capitalism, which, by the way, is the history of the CCF. If you look at the Regina Manifesto, it concludes with a call to our CCF government will work to Won't stop until capitalism's been abolished. But that's been kind of thrown out by the party leadership over the past few decades, even though there's a deep tradition, deep history of that. So we understand that they don't want that part of the race, and so we are organizing accordingly, which is building momentum and building awareness, building financial resources to make it more difficult for them to just block members from deciding if they want to support my candidacy or not.
Well, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Eve Angler. Eve is well known to any who've listened to this show over the many years that Eve has been appearing on it. He is an author and journalist and activist and currently running, as he's describing now, for the leadership, the vacant leadership of the NDP, the federal NDP, kind of a vacant party, I was tempted to say, after they got thoroughly trounced in the last election, down to seven sitting members, and they've lost their party status in the parliament as well. Eve, when I was talking in the first half with Igmar, we talked about the international issues being local issues, especially considering Palestine. This seems to be a big departure point between your candidacy. You've got a lot of policies that I think other candidates would find difficult to match or to go along with. And Palestine is definitely one of those. How does that affect your leadership run, do you think, your support of Palestine?
Well, Palestine, in some ways, I mean, we're going much further with ending Canadian complicity in Israel's live stream Holocaust. We're calling for the anti-Palestinian terrorism list to be abolished. We are calling for Operation Proteus, which is Canada building the Palestinian Security Force to oversee the occupation of the West Bank. We're calling for that to end. We are calling for the registered charities, this upwards of $500 million that's sent from subsidized by all Canadians sent to projects in Israel. We're calling for that at minimum for the current rules of the CRA to be applied to block a lot of that, but actually go forward and stop the whole financial pipeline through charities to Israel. So we're calling for things that others in the race are not willing to. But Palestine, in some ways, there has been a positive. It's taken a long time for some of the NDP figures, but there's been a sort of break, and now ostensibly everyone's against the genocide in Gaza. In fact, I would say it's more on the military question where the divide is even more stark, because the NDP and Heather McPherson specifically is absolute NATO hawk. She's still on the NATO Parliamentary Association. She's just been a complete NATO proxy war hawk. She's goes to military events and celebrates Canada's military. She has backed the whole U.S. empire view of the world. That is why Mark Carney has just massively increased military spending for, supposedly the threats of China or Russia or Iran. That's why we have to just pump $150 billion into the military a year. That's the plan now in a decade. And that's a huge attack against social programs. And I'm saying, first of all, I've been challenging the very simplistic and at best or outright erroneous depiction of world affairs that underlies the huge military boost. And I'm saying that we should actually, rather than increasing this bloated military budget, we should be decreasing it. We should, at minimum, be going in the direction of Mexico, which spends about 0.7% of its GDP on the military. We're at now 2%. At minimum, we should go in the direction of Mexico, but maybe we should think about going in the direction of Costa Rica, or Panama or Iceland, which don't have national military. So we're talking a completely different geopolitical outlook, And the military is a big player in that because it's sucking up ever more of the public resources that should be going into building hundreds of thousands of units of social or co-op housing. They just announced, Mark Carney on Sunday announced a big new housing strategy. In that strategy, they allocated $1 billion, not over 1 year, over many years. It's not exactly clear over how many years, but $1 billion over an undetermined number of years, maybe as long as a decade, to deal with homelessness. Well, one of the surface combatants, that's 1/8 of the cost of the surface combatants that the Liberals are buying. They're $7.5 billion per surface combatant, and they're purchasing 15 of them. So in his big housing announcement, big old kerfuffle, really taking the housing crisis seriously, he's putting up about 1/8 of the cost, the upfront cost. The whole life cycle cost is going to be two or three times this, but the upfront cost of a single surface combatant. And that, I think, kind of encapsulates this divide between the military industrial complex throwing money at the Irving shipbuilding out on the East Coast, and of course these surface combatants are going to have the Tomahawk missiles that can be shot 1500 kilometers, right? So I don't know, Canadian vessel can be somewhere around, I don't know, maybe somewhere around Miami or and hit Caracas. I mean, that's what we're giving the capacities of the Canadian Navy with this $7.5 billion surface combatant ships. So this is about strengthening the hand of politicians, these monsters like Carney and Poilievre, who've been supporting the live stream Holocaust in Gaza. It's giving them greater capacity to intimidate and to wage war internationally, and it's doing that by sucking out the resources necessary to actually deal with the security threats that those living in abject misery on the streets, or those who've been displaced by forest fires or other climate disturbances. So this I think is a central division within the NDP. There is no one among the potential leadership candidates or announced, or anyone major figure in the party that is even suggesting the notion of reducing Canadian military spending. They're saying, at the better end, they're sort of saying, oh, well, we shouldn't, increase it as much as Carney wants. But the reality is under Trudeau, we doubled military spending. Harper was, it was down under around, right around 1% of GDP. We've doubled it. Even before these recent increases, it's been a massive increase already, and now they're going even further. So we should absolutely be the NDP in general should be challenging military spending, not just at 2% or 3% or 5%. It should be challenging even the notion of hitting 1%, and that frees up a lot of resources to do a lot of good to deal with the real security threats that the population, the Canadians, are facing.
Yeah, well, and one thinks about Dwight Eisenhower's office leaving speech way back when he, what everything you devote to a bomber is taken away from a school or something, to along this line. The idea of standing armies is something that's actually quite new. People might forget that it's such a post-World War II thing to have these massive standing armies sucking up huge amounts of your resources. And now they want to, as you say, they hide it in this 5% figure, not saying that that's 5% of the entire production of the country, not 5% of the government's budget, around $150 billion a year, as you say. Even when I began this episode, I compared the local and the global, saying that the global is the local now, and in this sense. In the Palestine sense, it is, in the support for Israel, it is. I'm looking at an article by David Gray Donald in The Maple just out yesterday, and he's talking about the effect that the Abraham Global Peace Initiative, a pro-Israel charity here in Canada, has on policing, on the police departments across this country. Have you seen David Gray Donald's article, Eve?
Yeah, I read the first half of it, and then got disrupted by something. But the political point is absolutely clear, not just in those details of Canadian police chiefs sitting on the board of a extremist anti-Palestinian pro-genocide organization, but it is more broadly. Like, one of the things that Mark Carney is pursuing 2 years into a live stream Holocaust is he's pursuing bubble zones nationally, which is basically suppress people's ability to protest outside of a whole slew of different community institutions. He is pursuing strengthening the terror list and a number of areas in the criminal code that are give the police greater powers to repress and to claim something as hate speech, and to basically restrict protest. Just to give a sense of where this is, some of this is heading. So the launch event for Toronto for my tour, the first of the 10 events, the under pressure from advocates of genocide, the St. Paul's Bloor Street Church in Toronto, 3 days before the event, withdrew the room booking. So then we, without the ability to, thousands of leaflets and posters have been put up all across the city. So there's no way we can, people are going to show up at that venue. There's no way we could reach out to people in 3 days and, give a different venue. So they've canceled it. So we announced we were going forward. Now, the reaction of Mayor Weinstein, the former head of the Jewish Defense League, who's one of the people who's been pushing for shutting down the getting the church to shut down this event, he is now calling for the Toronto bubble zone to be applied to our announced rally that will just take place in front of the venue that we have booked, that we have a contract to have a room in. He's now calling for the bubble zone to be applied. So he basically saying it would be illegal and the police would arrest us for just holding a public event outside of the venue that we booked the room for. This is the logic of where Zionist repression is going. This is, we've seen, hundreds and hundreds of people fired, expelled, arrested, because of protesting genocide over the past 2 years. And we've seen cities and many different municipalities impose these greater restrictions on protest. Now, federally, we have Mark Carney following on from the most repressive measure, of course, was when they listed SAMIDUN, Palestinian Political Prisoners Network, Vancouver-based grassroots organization, as a terrorist organization back in October. That was under Trudeau. That was the most egregious repression that's taken place over the past 2 years. But now Carney is taking some further steps down that path, and that is all tied into the article you're referring to, which is this cozy relationship between police chiefs, police departments, genocide lobby organizations, the Israeli state. They often go on trips to Israel and stuff like that. So this is how this plays out, here, where because there are forces, because there is a desire to back the endless crimes by this absolutely lawless terror state, there's a whole implication for Canadians in terms of our civil liberties. And so we are, seeing the result of that type of repressive, I call maybe call it Zionist authoritarianism.
Well, and in David Gray Donald's article at the Maple, and that's readthemaple.com, it's worth checking out. He quotes Michael Gendron. He's a spokesperson for the Canadian Police Association, who says that their support for the Abraham Global Peace Initiative should be, quote, viewed as a principled stand against hatred and violence. And he goes on to say that, of course, our association fully supports the right of Canadians to engage in peaceful protest and gatherings, presumably. At the same time, we must also affirm the right of Jewish Canadians to feel safe, respected, and protected in their own communities. Well, is there anything about your announced meeting or your intentions to hold this gathering outside of St. Paul's that threatens or shows any disrespect for that's illegal now, and it puts the Jewish Canadian community at any risk?
Well, first of all, there's a rabbi speaking. Rabbi David Miviser is speaking, so it's obviously. This is if anyone will feel disrespect from this event, it will be people who identify with the Israeli military killing endlessly in Gaza. You know, I can't deny that there are probably people who will feel disrespected by this event, but that's their problem, not my problem, and it certainly shouldn't be grounds for canceling event. And or this, you know, what would be an incredible escalation from there, the notion of trying to apply a bubble zone in front of a church to block people from speaking outside of it because the room has not been, the contract has not been fulfilled. But yeah, no, obviously all of this or much of this is underpinned by this this framing of opposition to Canada's complicity in genocide as being anti-Jewish. It's about framing the feelings of some, certainly not all, far from it, Canadian Jews, their feelings about things rather than the actual, you know, decimation and murder and starvation of you know, Palestinian women, children, men, and you know, destruction of their whole society. It's egregious racism, of course, but it is widespread in our political culture.
Well, Eve, we're fast running out of time, but before we go, is there any indication that other venues on this tour are getting this pressure? Has that been reported to you, or any indication that others are saying, no, I'm sorry, Eve, we don't want to have you here after all?
I think that this Toronto event is a bit unique because, I mean, there was a lot of leaflets and posters put up. It's really been pushed hard. Toronto is a particularly pro-Zionist a political culture, so I don't think I don't think there's going to be cancellations taking place elsewhere. But I have to say that the university booking the next night in Waterloo, just today there was the security asked for a. The professor who booked the room asked them to fill out this form and have a meeting over the security situation for the event, which I assume flows out of either some sort of direct criticism from pro-genocide figures, or the fact that the university security maybe heard about what's happened in Toronto, or something of the like. So there's probably going to be other pressures that come to bear. I'm guessing it won't escalate to the point of an actual cancellation, but, you know, we will see.
Well, now, again, Eve will be in Vancouver on the 21st, Duncan and Nanaimo the 22nd, Victoria the 23rd, and back in Vancouver on the 24th. Where should people go, Eve, to find out things like your schedule, the times of these events, and other aspects of your leadership bid for the NDP?
Eve for ndpleader.ca. Or my website, evingler.com.
And that's Y-V-E-S-E-N-G-L-E-R.com, evingler.com. It's always a joy to speak with you, Eve. Thanks a lot for coming again. Safe travels on your way out west. And I hope to see you when you arrive at somewhere other than the parking lot of some place somewhere that the police deem safe and out of the bubble zone.
Thanks a lot.
And thanks too to Igmar Lee. That's all I got for this week. Until the next time. Thanks, Eve.
Their message always to everybody through all their advertising, all their PR, everything is, we are your friends. And it's like, no, you are not our friends. Friends are not people. His bottom line is how much profit they can make out of you. It is completely different.
Guerrilla Radio, knowing who our real friends are since 1999.
We're running out of time to put out a fire. Fire.
We're from the Kiwasa Preteen Spring Camp. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, Campus Community Radio from Simon Fraser University on Burnaby Mountain.